democracy. It's coming through a hole in the air. From those nights in Tiananmen Square. It's coming from the feel that this ain't exactly real, or it's real, but it ain't exactly there. From the wars against disorder, from the sirens night and day, from the fires of the homeless, from the ashes of the gay, democracy is coming to the USA. It's coming from the sorrow in the street, the holy places where the races meet. From the homicidal bitchin' that goes down in every kitchen to determine who will serve and who will eat. It's coming to America first, the cradle of the best and of the worst. It's here they got the range and the machinery of change, and it's here they got the spiritual thirst. It's here the family's broken, and it's here the lonely say that the heart has got to open in a fundamental way. Democracy is coming to the USA. I'm sentimental, if you know what I mean. I love the country, but I can't stand the scene. And I'm neither left or right. I'm just staying home tonight. Getting lost in that hopeless little screen. But I'm stubborn as those garbage bags that time cannot decay. I'm junk, but I'm still holding up this little wild bouquet. Democracy is coming to the USA. Sail on. Sail on, oh mighty ship of state. To the shores of need. Past the reefs of greed, through the squalls of hate. Sail on, sail on, sail on.
Yeah, you are listening to a very special edition of The Mike Malloy Show. Brad Friedman of bradblog.com here to occupy your public airwaves with you all night long, live and local here, broadcasting from the left coast at the beautiful studios of K-Talk AM 1150. Delighted you could join us as democracy comes to the USA. Or does it? We'll find out. We'll be talking about it all night long. We'll be talking to folks occupying Wall Street, occupying D.C., occupying this entire nation once and for all. Now, write down this phone number because this is how you'll get through to the show tonight. 877-520-1150. That's our phone number. I'm here for Mike Malloy for the next three nights, and one of the things we're going to do is keep the last hour of the show open for your calls, particularly from folks who are occupying, whether it's D.C., whether it's Los Angeles, whether it's Wall Street, or any of the 100, I think we're up to something like 115 different occupations around the country. We want to hear from you. We want to give you your public airwaves back. The revolution may not be televised, but it will at least tonight, tomorrow, and Friday be radioactive. So 877-520-1150 will be our phone number. Our live chat room tonight is at bradblog.com, so stop on by there. For Earth, Jeannie Dean is in there. I think Jeannie Dean's been out at the Occupy LA fest for the last three or four days or nights. So check into the live and lively chat room at bradblog.com, where you will always find me, your friendly citizen, investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, and muckraker, and of course, all around swell fellow from Bradblog. Later in the show, we're going to have some great guests. Jesse LaGreca. You may have seen this video. If you haven't, we'll be playing it for you tonight. If you watch Fox News, you definitely definitely haven't seen this video, because it was an interview with Fox News at Occupy Wall Street that, for some reason, Fox News will not be playing. You'll find out why in a bit when we get to that. Also, we're going to be joined a little bit later by Dr. Roger Johnston from Argonne National Labs, he of their vulnerability assessment team, who, as I broke in a story last week at Salon.com, was able to hack a Diebold voting machine for with $26 in parts, actually $10 in parts, another $15 if you want to use the radio frequency remote control to hack it from a half a mile away, take complete control of the touchscreen voting machine. And guess what? It's not just touchscreens. It's also paper ballot optical scan machines. We're going to be talking to the guy who led the team that did that hack that we broke recently at Salon and at Brad Blog, and it is chilling. We will talk about that and much more, but I want to go straight to the phones here because I already have a caller. Some guy, was this Mike? Mike from D.C. is calling in. Mike from D.C., welcome to the Mike Malloy Show, sir. How are you?
Yeah, I'm doing great. How are you, Brad?
Oh, man.
I love your program. First-time listener. First-time caller.
Caller.
been listening for, oh, God, since I was 12.
Is that right?
Oh, yeah.
Well, welcome, Mike Malloy, to the Mike Malloy Show. Glad to have you here, brother.
This is a little extra-dimensional. I mean, it really is.
We're trying to blow your mind and everyone else's mind.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you what. Right now, it wouldn't take a whole lot. I've been in D.C. since about 10 o'clock this morning. And I have to tell you, tomorrow, I'm not sure what's going to happen tomorrow in terms of number of people who are going to converge on Freedom Plaza, but I will guarantee you that this is going to be a day to remember, the beginning of a day to remember here in D.C. I have never come in contact with so many activists as I have this afternoon and this evening, from veterans groups, former military, from peace action groups, from labor groups, Code Pink. I mean, just on and on and on.
And that's already. Did you go to the? Was this? Where did you meet these folks today? Were they? Did you go to the Take Back America Dream Conference?
No, that transition church, which is a Catholic church in the.
Hang on, Mike. You're. I don't know if you're moving around, but your cell phone is going a little crazy for us. Give me one second. And just so folks know, the reason I'm sitting in for Mike for the next few nights, he's in Washington, D.C. He will be emceeing beginning tomorrow it was originally called October2011.org, and it was before
right.
the it was actually planned prior to the Occupy Wall Street demonstrations. Now it's called Occupy Washington, D.C.org as well. So let's see if Mike's phone is behaving now.
How's that?
Sounds, I think, a little bit better. So you met all of these folks who are gearing up for the kickoff of Occupy Washington, D.C., which is to start tomorrow.
Exactly. And October2011.org, as you pointed out, which is the way this started out, several months before, the organization started several months before the Occupy movement, but now it's converged, and it really doesn't matter what the name is. The goals are exactly the same. The tactics are the same. Civil disobedience is the goal. Resistance to what has happened in this country. And it's my understanding, Brad, I think you said 100-plus cities are now have Occupy organizations. This evening they told us it was over 200 cities, and there were several thousand. I've heard reports from 10 to 15 to 20,000 people marched in Washington or in New York today.
Right.
So this is something that is, I think this is it. This is something that is not going to be, first of all, it's not going to be co-opted by corporate America, as so many movements have been co-opted. It's not going to stop. And by God, the attention of the ruling class is going to be gotten by this movement. And what happens after their attention is gotten, that depends a lot on how they respond.
Well, I wonder if it will get their attention. And you're right. The Guardian UK was reporting an hour or so ago that there were 15,000 thousand down there in Wall Street marching right along as the union members, tons and tons of union members came on board. I listened to you on your show last night, Mike, and you had some concerns about that. Are you worried that the union groups will somehow co-opt this movement? Because, you know, I've been watching what they're doing down there in Wall Street. I don't know if the way they are setting this up, I don't know if it is co-optable, or am I just naive?
No, you're probably right. I hope that's the case. And the warning I was talking about last night is to make sure that the union leadership, so much of the union leadership, are really kind of corporate Democrats, not too much different from Obama.
Mm-hmm.
The union rank and file is entirely different. I'll guarantee you that you will not see union leadership trying to get by on $14 an hour. So, but the rank and file, new people going into the UAW are expected to go to work for that and be happy with it and shut their mouths. So what I was talking about last night, and I mean this, is to make sure that this movement is not taken over by special interest groups who then simply corporatize it, mm-hmm. much like what happened to the environmental movement.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you have Earth Day sponsored by one of the sponsors being BP, then you know that the universe has shifted and something is real, real wrong. And I don't think that's going to happen with the Occupy America movement, if I can use that term.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't think, like you said, I don't think it's co-optable. The goals and objectives are what they are. It's not going to be one or two issues. It's going to be essentially a leaderless movement. Nobody's interested in power here, taking power of this movement. And anyone who tries, or any organization that tries to take over the movement, I think will be quickly turned aside. This is truly an organic movement that has developed in the streets, and I think that's how it's going to continue.
Now, tomorrow at the DC event, you're emceeing. What time does it kick off, and where is it tomorrow, and what will we expect from this from the kickoff tomorrow of Occupy DC?
Well, it starts at noon in Freedom Plaza. I have I think Dr. Margaret Flowers is the first one to speak, and then I will, and then I will MC the stage for the rest of the afternoon up until 3 o'clock. There are a number of speakers, a number of groups, the Raging Grannies, a bunch of groups are going to be there to provide music. At 3 o'clock, we are leaving the plaza and headed for the national headquarters of the Chamber of Commerce.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
My friends at the Chamber of Commerce.
Then on to, I believe the plan is, on to the White House, and eventually to work our way back to Freedom Plaza, and then the evening's activities begin around 6 o'clock, and that will be a series of teach-ins, a series of events, what am I trying to say here, teaching people nonviolent resistance,
right,
civil disobedience, how to conduct yourself, how to handle the media, how to educate each other. And there'll be workshops on these various issues where people can come together and discuss. And believe me, the list is long of everything that has gotten screwed up in this country and
yes.
How to unscrew it up.
Right.
And also, I think a lot of people are going to be taught consensus decision making for people who have had that training, and I've had it. For people who have had that training, it is unshakable once a decision is made, because to put it in one or two sentences, what consensus decision making is when every point of view around an issue is incorporated into the final decision as to how it's going to be resolved. Sometimes that can take hours. It's a very tedious process. So once a decision is made, then there's no such thing as a weak link in the chain of mm-hmm. people who made the decision, because everybody's ideas and thoughts have been incorporated. It's much stronger, much more unshakable than a system where you have a committee that runs things or a leader who runs things and the orders come down from the top. That's not what this is about.
And
this
how? Yeah, no, go ahead. How long do you know how long they are planning to stay at this point? Are they going to do the same thing the folks are doing down in Wall Street? And of course, how long are you staying? Because I need to plan my next week.
I've got to come back Friday,
okay.
But and that's Friday late, so you'll be doing Friday, I hope.
Okay.
The idea is demonstration, presence in the streets will last one day longer than necessary to let corporate America, to let the greed heads, let the billionaires know that the free ride is over. The game is up. The jig is up. Accountability is going to be demanded, whether it is the accountability of people like the war criminals, George Bush and Dick Cheney, whether it's accountability to the corporate bastards on Wall Street who destroyed the economy and people on the street. Accountability, there's no one particular word that applies to this, but accountability is one of the words. So how long will it last? One day longer than necessary.
Sounds good to me. Listen, I got to get out for a break here.
Okay.
Mike Malloy in D.C. You're going to check back in with us tomorrow. Let us know how things are going.
I'll do it.
Thank you, brother.
All right. Take care.
Take care, boss. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Much more occupation of your public airwaves. That was Mike Malloy right here on The Mike Malloy Show. And I'm Brad, in for Mike on The Malloy Show. We're fixing the chat room at bradblog.com. Stay with us. Welcome back to the Mike Malloy Show. Our last segment ran long there because, boy, that Mike Malloy, he just goes on and on and on, doesn't he? Brad Friedman in for Mike Malloy. For those trying to get into the chat room at bradblog.com, I had screwed up some code there. I think I have it fixed. Refresh the page. Come on by. Occupy our chat room as we occupy your public airwaves all night long. We're going to be talking to Jesse LaGreca from Occupy Wall Street right after this break. You're listening to Brad here on The Malloy Show.
Something happening here, but what it is ain't exactly clear. There's a man with a gun over there, telling me I got to beware. I think it's time we stop, children. What's that sound? Everybody look what's going down.
Yeah, are you looking? Are you looking at what's going down? Brad Friedman of bradblog.com in for Mike Malloy tonight, tomorrow, and Friday as Mike is out occupying D.C. You can get more information at October2011.org or now the same site, I believe, OccupyWashingtonDC.org, where Mike will be emceeing the kickoff of that occupation, as hundreds of them are now springing up around the country. 15,000 reportedly demonstrated down in Wall Street today. We're going to be speaking momentarily with Jesse LaGreca from the Occupy Wall Street demonstrations. He had a remarkable exchange with Griff Jenkins. Of Fox News, an interview that will not be airing on Fox News, but it will be airing right here on The Mike Malloy Show, and you'll see why in a second. We have, I believe, fixed the chat room now over at bradblog.com, so occupy that while we occupy your public airwaves, and spread the word. Third hour tonight, we will have open lines. We want to hear from the occupiers around the country, and hell, even around the world. Our number will be at that time, 877-520-1150. As I say, we're going to go to Jesse LaGreca shortly, but Sanchez, great Mike Malloy caller, is calling in. He has been occupying L.A. for the last few days, and there's a big demonstration tomorrow, so I want to get that information out before it's too late here in Los Angeles. Hey, Sanchez, welcome, sir, to the Mike Malloy Show.
Gracias, General Friedman, and props to Tony and to Desi as well. I'm here just a couple of blocks away from the Occupy LA location, which is at City Hall Park, announcing tomorrow there is going to be a huge demonstration starting at 12 noon. It's just basically a protest against the banksters. There's a bank complex. It's in the Twin Towers. We don't have the Twin Towers, but it's a building at 350 South Grand Avenue. It begins at 12 noon. Downtown again. This is Occupy LA plus thousands of protesters calling out for this, a protest against the banksters at 350 South Grand Avenue.
350 South Grand Avenue at
12 noon.
At high noon, yep. You can get more information at OccupyLosAngeles.org. Yeah, go ahead, Sanchez.
Yes, and one exciting piece of information here, because this is very, very exciting. Our group has been so in touch, and we have to give respects and props to the LAPD because they have been so gracious to us. I want to say that again this evening, but also to our City Hall, because they're going to be passing a resolution. Brad, this is the first governmental resolution that's going to pass, and the City Council is going to allow us to remain on the park as a credible organization. They're going to let us camp, and that's going to be the first time across the very, very country where that's going to be allowed to happen. So that is a resolution that will be voted on this Tuesday, October 11th, but they've got the vote, so it's basically in the pocket right
now.
But
it's
great news.
It is great news, and I spoke earlier today with Lisa Claypier, one of the media folks out there with Occupy LA, on my Pacifica radio show earlier today. She talked about this resolution and the fact that the city council members have been coming out there, have been shaking your hands. It rained and rained for the last 24 hours. It's just begun to clear now, but I know that the mayor, Mayor Villagarosa, sent over, I understand, 100 or so rain ponchos to the demonstrators. A very different scene, it seems, out here in at Occupy LA than it is out in Wall Street.
Well, Brad, as you know, we're so laid back out here, we're basically unconscious. That used to be the old California saying. But seriously, we have a safe environment. We have a safe and loving environment. There's a lot of vegan and vegetarian food. If you need to grab a bite to eat, we have all kinds of other things here. But it is a safe and a proper environment. We're having general assemblies just like everybody else. So at this point, I just want to send greetings to all the other Occupy organizations that are listening tonight. Respects and props to you all.
Thank you, brother. Go out there, stay safe, give our best to everyone, and tell them, give us a call tonight, Pacific time, 8 to 9 p.m. We want to hear from the occupiers. Appreciate it, Sanchez. I got to switch on over to... Go get him.
Okay.
All right, brother. I want to switch over to, if I don't screw this up, here we go. I think I got that right. Okay, switching coasts here, over to Jesse LaGreca, out at the Wall Street protests, let me say hello to Jesse, and then we'll let you know exactly what it was that caught my attention that made me want to bring Jesse on. Hey, Jesse, welcome to the Mike Malloy Show, sir.
How you doing, Brad? Lovely to be on with you.
Great to have you here. How are you holding up out there? I understand. Is it true? The Guardian was reporting tonight that 15,000 showed up at Occupy Wall Street with a whole bunch of union support that decided to jump into the game today.
I wouldn't be surprised. The crowds are phenomenally large today. And, you know, whatever number they throw at me, I couldn't guesstimate myself being lost in the crowd. But it was a lot of people. Having been here since day three, there's a lot of people out here. And I'm really glad to see the support.
You've been there since day three. Now, is everybody staying warm and dry and getting everything that they need at the moment out there?
There's so many people, it's hard to answer that. I mean, as long as the weather's okay, we stay dry, warm. It's starting to get colder out. So, I mean, we're still in need of supplies, and I still encourage people to go to Occupy Wall Street, wallst.org, and if they're willing to help, we can certainly use it.
OccupyWallST.org. All right, Jesse. Hey, do you mind if I play some of this? I broke this into two separate clips. I want folks to hear of your conversation with the Grifter, Griff Jenkins of Fox News. He is, of course, one of their favorite ambush reporters. He decided to ambush you a couple of days ago, Jesse. He picked the wrong guy to ambush, it seems to me. Let me play one of these clips, and then we'll come back and talk. But I want folks to hear why this clip, an interview with Griff Jenkins of Fox News by Jesse LaGreca, who's on the line with us here, this will not be airing on Fox News because, well, Jesse just wasn't playing along here. And I've cut out the beginning of Griff's question, because he sort of rambles on and on for a while. But what he's trying to ask is, what are you doing here? What are you hoping to incite? And, you know, how do you think this thing is going to end?
If you could have it in a perfect way, how would it be?
Well, I don't know. It's really difficult to kind of answer questions leading to those conclusions. I'd say that we didn't take our cue off of anybody, really. It became a more spontaneous movement. As far as seeing this end, I would like to see it end. I'd like to see the conversation continue. This is what we should have been talking about after 2008 when the economy collapsed. We basically patched a hole on the tire and said, yeah, let the car keep rolling. Unfortunately, it's fun to talk to the propaganda machine in the media, especially conservative leading networks such as yourself, because we find that we can't get conversations on the Department of Justice's ongoing investigation of News Corporation, for which you are an employee, but we can certainly ask questions like, you know, why are the poor engaging in class warfare? Now, after 30 years of having our living standards decrease while the wealthiest 1% have had it better than ever, I think it's time for maybe, I don't know, some participation in our democracy that isn't funded by news cameras and gentlemen such as yourself.
Now, dude, Jesse LaGreca, we can't, you said it was a little hard to hear, so hopefully people got the gist. You said we can't get conversations on the Justice Department's ongoing investigation of News Corporation. Of course, that has to do with the hacking investigation of Rupert Murdoch and News Corp. Now, you knew when you said that, Jesse, that your message was never going to be played on Fox News, didn't you?
Oh, of course. I mean, his question was really trying to link us in association to violence overseas, and I took offense to that. So I kind of looked at it like, you know, where I come from, if it throws a punch at you, you don't, you know, let him just get away with beating you up. So I thought, you know, if he's going to go in this direction, then I'm going to really go right after him, you know?
And you did. You nailed it. Let me play another clip here. And someone in the chat room, I think it was 4Earth, asked how we have this if Fox didn't air it. The reason is because someone else was filming Fox News interviewing you. Is that correct, Jesse?
That's absolutely correct.
All right, and I want to give credit to Drew Grant, who broke this at the New York Observer. That's why we even know about this. Okay, Jesse, another clip here. Your interview with Griff, and again, don't worry about what he says as far as it's a little harder to hear, but what's important is what Jesse says to Griff. So let's play part two of that, Tony.
Okay, but let me give you this challenge, Jesse.
Sure.
We're here giving you an opportunity on the record with Credit Ancestry to put any message you want out there, give you fair coverage, and I'm not going to in any way
advise
about it. So there is an exception to the case because you wouldn't be able to get your message out without us, yes?
No, certainly. I mean, take for instance when Glenn Beck was doing his protest and he called the president a person who hates white people and white culture. That was a low moment in America's history, and you guys kind of had a big part in it. So I'm glad to see you coming around and kind of paying attention with the other 99% of Americans are paying attention to, as opposed to the far right fringe who would love to just destroy the middle class entirely.
All right, fair enough. You have a voice and an important reason to criticize myself, my company, and anyone else. But let me ask you this. In fairness, does this administration, or President Obama, have any criticism as to the financial situation of the countries in there?
I think myself, as well as many other people, would like to see a little bit more economic justice or social justice, Jesus stuff, as far as feeding the poor, health care for the sick. You know, I find it really entertaining that people like to hold the Bill of Rights up while they're screaming at gay soldiers, but they just can't wrap their heads around the idea that a for-profit healthcare system doesn't work. So let's just look at it like this. If we want the president to do more, let's talk to him on a level that actually reaches people, instead of asking for his birth certificate and wasting time with total nonsense like Solyndra.
Total nonsense like Solyndra. Jesse, you nailed, I don't know how many Fox, anti-Fox points you nailed there in about a minute and a half, but you must watch a lot of Fox News, Jesse LaGreca.
Actually, the funny thing is I don't, but I do look at a lot of fact-checking websites, MediaMatters.org, Crooks and Liars. The power of the Internet is upon us, you know? So you don't need to necessarily watch the programming to be able to pick up their sound bites and understand who and what they're attacking and what their talking points are. And once you do that, then you know exactly where they're going, and it's just really easy to beat them up, you know?
Well, you nailed it. Listen, Jesse, hang on a second. I got to take a quick break. We're going to come back with more Jesse LaGreca for a few more minutes here. Next hour, Dr. Roger Johnston, by the way, joins us to talk about his new Diebold hack. So a lot of occupation coming up here for the next hour or two. And I want to ask Jesse about this question where Griff Jenkins of Fox News was trying to get him to, trying to get him to either beat up on President Obama or say he loved President Obama. We'll find out which is which when we come back to the Mike Malloy Show. As I said, our chat room is now back working and open at bradblog.com, so stop over there and join us. More Jesse LaGreca right here on the Mike Malloy Show. You're listening to Brad.
Can run on for a long time, run on for a long time, run on for a long time. Sooner or later, gotta cut you down.
Welcome back to the Mike Malloy Show. Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com in for Mike tonight as he's out in D.C. occupying D.C. beginning tomorrow, and we're speaking of occupations, we are speaking with Jesse LaGreca down at Wall Street, and you get more information, you can find out how you can help at Occupy Wall Street, that's wallst.org, and if you missed Jesse LaGreca's terrific interview with Fox News, the one that will not air, you'll see why. If you stop by, we've got it in full over at bradblog.com. You can check it out. Jesse, the folks in the chat room here think you're absolutely brilliant. They're all going on and on about how brilliant you are. I just thought you'd want to know that.
To hear it. I honestly don't know how to respond to some of the comments I'm getting because I'm not used to it. I walked through the park here today and I'm shaking hands in every direction and got people taking pictures with me. So it's new to me, but you know, it's, at the same time, I kind of laugh to myself because I'm a working class guy. I'm a blue collar guy. So I almost feel like, you know, hey, who better to tell the story than someone who's been through this struggle themselves, you know?
Well, that's it, man. And you know what? I have been saying for years at BradBlog that people need to be the media. You need to speak out about what's going on. You have to not be afraid to take on Fox News. I will go on any time Fox News wants to invite me. I'm delighted to chat with them, and I'm glad you took the opportunity to do so. Okay, we've just got a few minutes here left in this hour, Jesse, so I want to get an idea. One of the things that Griff Jenkins, their ambush reporter for Greta Van Susteren, said to you was, in fairness, does this administration, President Obama, have any criticism as to the final financial situation, etc. They really want to try to paint the folks down at Occupy Wall Street as somehow Obama lovers, Democrats. Somehow they're trying to get Barack Obama elected with this. How do you respond to that?
you know what's funny? It's like you you make demands against Wall Street, and the Republican Party kind of takes it as an attack on themselves because they're totally tied to the hip. They are one and the same. You couldn't tell me that if you voted dead down the line against the Consumer Financial Protection Agency or the Dodd-Frank bill, which was flawed, but which was better than nothing, you couldn't tell me that you voted against that with the best interest of American consumers in mind. So to me, it's just hysterical that we didn't bring out science saying we're against the Republican Party. We brought out science saying we're against unfettered greed, and the Republican Party took that as an attack on themselves. To me, that says everything you need to know about them.
And so unlike the Tea Party, and I put that in quotes, and I'm not referring to the real Ron Paul Tea Party that started back in 2007, but the fake corporate Tea Party that came out more appropriately called the Sore Loser Party. That was all about let's get Obama out. You know, Democrats are bad. I haven't seen, maybe it's down there, but I haven't seen anything really for or against one political party or another down there. You've been there, Jesse. Have you seen that? And has that begun to change now that more unions are coming in and endorsing and trying to hitch their wagon to you guys?
Well, you see a spattering of some political affiliation, but it really is a non-political association. It's really American citizens, not one party or another. Now, you got a couple spatterings of Obama supporters. You got some spatterings of Ron Paul supporters and other candidates, you know, very little. But for the most part, it's apolitical. This is really about working class people who are just tired of listening to the obstruction, tired of listening to the excuses, and they want answers.
And how long are you planning on being down there, Jesse?
Absolutely, as long as it takes. I've got so many people trying to get my attention right now, but my priority is this because it's something I care passionately about.
Well, listen, I'm worried about you guys. We had a huge rainstorm out here in Los Angeles today, and I was worried about the Occupy LA folks, and they weathered it just fine, it seems like. And actually, the mayor of LA brought them rain ponchos, believe it or not. I'm worried about you guys as winter approaches. So if people go to the website OccupyWallStreet.org, but it's ST.org, they'll find information on how they can help you guys.
Absolutely. I mean, you can just imagine what we might need. Sleeping bags, umbrellas, socks, hand sanitizer, you know, just basic stuff. But I'm pretty sure they have a very detailed list, so any help that we can get is appreciated. And I'd like to give a shout-out to my people out in L.A., Chicago, everywhere, that I'm so proud of the young people in this country who are taking the future in their own hands and are going to forge the progress that we need to have a sustainable future for everybody, not just the wealthiest 1%.
Bless you, brother, and tell the folks, we're opening up the lines here from 11 p.m. to midnight, your time, today, tomorrow, and Friday, 877-520-1150 to hear from you. Thanks, Jesse. Brad, in for Mike.
Peace and love to one and all.
Thanks, brother. Brad, in for Mike. Much more straight ahead. Occupy your public airwaves. Mike Malloy Show, your very special Mike Malloy Show. Brad Friedman in for Mike, who is out helping to occupy Washington, D.C. all for the rest of the week. You can get more information at OccupyWashingtonDC.org or October2011.org. He'll be emceeing the kickoff of the Occupy event out there in D.C. tomorrow, and we will be talking to many more occupiers later on in this show and for the rest of the week. As I've been spreading the word that we are going to be sitting in this week for Malloy, I've been trying to get the word out to the occupiers that third hour I am leaving open for you to call in at 877-520-1150. There's some dispute. It's either 115 or 150 or more than 200 different occupations around the country going on right now, beginning to grow, just starting out. I would love to hear from all of you guys tonight in the next hour. But before we get there, speaking of democracy, a week or so ago, I broke a story at Salon.com. That kind of creeped even me out. Those of you folks out there who know me and my work at Bradblog.com know that I have been working for years on election integrity issues. Bradblog.com. We got a chat room there at Bradblog.com, and you can tweet me at the Bradblog. Okay, got that out of the way. I have been reporting on election integrity issues, problems with electronic voting, the war on voting by Republicans who have passed these voter suppression laws all across the country. But as far as I'm concerned, this has never really been, to me, a right or left issue. This is an issue of right and wrong. And to that end, Joe Miller, remember Joe Miller, the Tea Partier up there, who ran for the U.S. Senate, the Republican, got the Republican nomination in, November of 2010 up in Alaska. Even he and I have common ground on this, as Joe Miller linked to my story at Salon on this. $26. Hell, you don't even need $26. For $10, $26, if you want to use the remote control, the radio frequency remote control, and little more than an eighth grade science lab education, you too can hack a Diebold voting machine without knowing anything about its source code. You can take over the entire machine. At least so says Dr. Roger Johnston, PhD, of the Vulnerability Assessment Team at Argonne National Laboratory. That's a division of the U.S. Department of Energy. I broke that story at Salon, included the video exclusively from the folks at Argonne. We're going to talk about that hack, what it means for 2012, and then maybe even some solutions, because Dr. Roger Johnston from Argonne Laboratory in Illinois joins me now. Hey, Roger, welcome to the Mike Malloy Show, sir.
Good evening.
Great to have you join me here. I've spent some months actually talking to you as you were developing this hack, as you were working things out. And I want to get to the specifics of how this thing works in a second. But just so people understand, once again, you don't live with your mom in her basement, as far as I know, and hack through the middle of the night. You're at Argonne National Laboratory. What does that lab and the vulnerability assessment team that you work with actually do when it's not hacking electronic voting machines?
Well, Argonne National Laboratory does quite a wide range of research and development, consulting, assistance for the government and for private companies. We in the vulnerability assessment team look at a wide range of issues associated with physical security devices, systems, and programs.
And, okay, so you're dealing with very serious issues. And before we get into how this hack actually works, one of the first things you told me was that you see this as a serious national security concern as far as how vulnerable these voting systems are to manipulation.
Yeah, I really think that election integrity is just a serious local issue. It's a serious national security issue. We really have a situation, I think, where, while it's not necessary to be a foreign power to be able to hijack elections, it certainly, I would think, might be tempting to foreign powers. But unfortunately, in general, I think our election security is not good enough even to worry about it at that level. We have to worry about, I think, individual hackers.
How does this hack that you developed work, and how is it different, really, from any other similar type of hack? Because, you know, I've been covering this for years. I reported on the Princeton virus hack of a Diebold voting system, where they were able to insert code into the machine that would flip votes on a Diebold touchscreen electronic voting system in such a way that it would flip elections. It could pass itself from machine to machine. We've seen other other hacks like that. Yours kind of comes at this issue from a different angle. Explain that.
Well, my colleague John Warner and I, who work on a variety of different security-type devices, were vaguely paying attention to the work that had been done looking at the security of electronic voting machines. And we realized that a lot of the people, the majority, looking at the security issues were computer scientists or cyber hackers. And while we certainly agreed that many of the attacks that they had demonstrated were probably viable and of great concern, we kind of got the idea that perhaps it's a situation where when you have a hammer, everything looks like a nail. These people were attacking these voting machines by going after the smarts of the machine, the computer or the microprocessor. And while some of these cyber attacks were pretty easy, a lot of them required a fair amount of sophistication. And we got to thinking that there's probably simpler ways. In particular, it's not often necessary really to fully understand what's going on the smart end of the machine if you can fiddle with the data or the communication stream elsewhere in the device.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's essentially the type of attack that we wanted to look at. The type we chose was what's called a man-in-the-middle attack. It's a little bit of a misnomer. It's actually a microprocessor in the middle. But it's a pretty simple idea. We're going to essentially interfere with the data coming from the voter going into the smarts of the machine so that if the voter votes for our candidate, fine, we'll leave that data flow alone. But if the voter votes for somebody we don't like, we'll flip that vote and basically tell the microprocessor or the computer incorrect data about what the voter wanted.
And now you're able to do this without having any knowledge of the source code of the voting system. And I should say, we've talked about Diebold touchscreen system here, but you also did a similar hack with the Sequoia touchscreen system, specifically the Sequoia AVC Advantage, the one that's used all across New Jersey for the most part. So you knew nothing about the source code. None of that knowledge was necessary because you're inserting a physical chip, right? A piece, you call it a piece of alien electronics, sort of between the voter and the motherboard of the computer?
Yes, that's correct. Actually, the Sequoia Advantage AVC isn't exactly a touchscreen. It's more kind of a push-button machine, but it's basically a similar idea.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, in either case, we basically don't worry too much about what's going on inside the microprocessor or the computer. We're just feeding the computer bad data. So it's the old story of garbage in, garbage out. We don't really care what the smarts of the machine is doing if we're basically fooling it as to what the voter wanted.
In essence, your chip is the only thing it needs to know is what is the incoming signal, and is that the signal that it wants to pass to allow to go through essentially to the voting machine? Am I understanding that correct?
Yeah, basically, in the case of a touchscreen, it's a two-dimensional coordinate on the touchscreen that represents the candidate of interest. So we just essentially send the wrong coordinate information.
Mm-hmm.
In the case of the Diebold, we only had to do this one way. In the case of the Sequoia, we had to do a man in the middle in both directions. We had to tell bad data to the computer, and then the response of the computer that lights up certain lights to tell the voter that his or her candidate was chosen, we had to tamper with that data too. So the Sequoia was a little more complicated in being a two-way man in the middle,
mm-hmm.
whereas the Diebold, because of the way the voting is done, only needed to be one way, although we could have done it two-way.
So if it took a little more than an eighth grade science lab education, as your colleague John Warner says in the video for the Diebold, maybe then it's a ninth or tenth grade education to hack the Sequoia. Is that all we're talking about as far as the difference goes in this?
Well, actually, the Sequoia was a lot easier if you don't worry about covering up your tracks, if you're not concerned about the machine permanently having the data wrong. But if you want to basically cover your tracks, so in effect you turn the cheating off after election day, then the Sequoia is a little more complicated.
I got
you. It kind of depends on what you're trying to accomplish.
Did this take you, actually, you know what, let me take a quick break here. We're going to come back with Dr. Roger Johnston of Argonne National Laboratory, the vulnerability assessment team who hacked, and you know what, and if you see this video, we've got it at bradblog.com. It's had about 30,000 views over just the last few days since I broke the story at Salon. They just take the entire touchscreen machine open over by remote control from up to half a mile away. Much more on that straight ahead. You're listening to Brad on The Mike Malloy Show.
Tuesday in November, I took that stroll to cast my ballot at the local poll. The lines were long, but I didn't care. I had a water, a hat, and my folding chair. Walked up to the booth, didn't say a word. Sure that my voice would be heard. I hit that button, my vote was sent. But now nobody knows exactly where it went. They lost my vote, it isn't fair. I took a stand, doesn't anybody care? They lost my vote, now do you know where did my ballot go?
Lost? Lost your vote? Or was it stolen by a bad guy with $26, a radio frequency remote control, who could take control of the machine and make it vote any way they wanted to? That's what Dr. Roger Johnston argues can happen, demonstrates can happen in a video tape that we broke last week. My story at salon.com on this and at bradblog.com. Dr. Roger Johnston of the Vulnerability Assessment Team at Argonne National Laboratories joins us to explain how this works and what we can do about it. And, by the way, if you have any questions, we would love to hear from you. The phone numbers here are 877-520-1150. That's 877-520-1150 if you have a question about this remarkable and frankly, a chilling hack. And, by the way, tomorrow, since I always talk about the problems with these electronic voting systems, tomorrow we're going to be talking about some solutions in the form of hand-counted paper ballots. Nancy Toby of New Hampshire will be joining us to talk about her book, Hands-on Elections, counted by... Hey, let me give you the full title here. Oh, now I can't find it. Now that I need it, I can't find it. Anyway, it's Hands-on Elections, counted by, you know, real people, stuff like that. We'll be talking about that tomorrow with Nancy Toby. Okay, Dr. Johnston, so you were able to take over this system. How long did it take you to figure out what you needed to do? Of course, if anybody does it now, it'll be easier because they can watch your video. But how long did it take you to figure out how to take control of this Diebold electronic voting machine?
Well, in the case of the Sequoia, we had it figured out in about 2 hours. Now, this is without a owner's manual or a circuit diagram. In the case of the Diebold, being a little more complicated machine, it took around 25 man-hours before we understood enough of what was going on to begin figuring out how we would tamper with it.
And so this was two different, touchscreen, direct recording electronic devices is what we call them. In the case of touch, Diebold, it's a touchscreen. The Sequoia one that you were able to remotely hack was a push button. But it's not just touchscreens. These are used in about 20 to 30% of the country. They will be used again next year in the presidential election. But as you and I discussed last week, it's not just touchscreens that are vulnerable to this sort of manipulation. This same thing could theoretically happen with paper ballot op-scan devices as well, correct?
We believe that these type of man-in-the-middle attacks are potentially viable for all kinds of different types of electronic voting machines, certainly potentially for an optical scan. Although I do have to say, if I had the choice of general design of an electronic voting machine, I would go with the optical scan. And I don't think they're currently very secure, but I believe it'd be possible to build in a fairly good security in that type of design. I think it's a much tougher problem on a touch screen or a touch button type of machine.
So this is something that it's not even necessarily a matter of building these systems better when you're talking about touch screen type voting machines, DREs, as we call them, direct recording electronic. Could they make it better, or is it smarter at this point just to ditch that and use paper ballots?
Well, I mean, I think that's a question that I'm not really qualified to answer. That
really I mean, on a security level,
right.
When it comes to DREs, can they even be protected?
Yes, I think they can. We're facing some serious challenges here. The machines themselves are not designed, in my view, with very much thought given to security. But more seriously, the way that they're typically used by election officials and election judges really isn't very optimal for good security. There's many fairly modest changes one could do that would potentially substantially improve the security of these machines, but it really involves having a healthy security culture and being able to think about the security issues, really thinking like the bad guys.
And it also doesn't get around the threat from election insiders who, it seems to me, are the greatest threat to these systems. We're going to talk about this more. We're speaking with Dr. Roger Johnson of Argonne National Labs. Give us a call, 877-520-1150. If you have a question, 877-520-1150. Brad in for Malloy.
What is wrong? And the evidence is clear. I'm not alone.
No, you won't. You guess I keep it going. Keep it going. We will be fighting for your vote. Whether you want to vote or not, if you vote, I think we should count it. I think we should count it accurately. And by the way, if you want to vote and you are of age, I think you should be allowed to vote. What do you think about that? Even if you don't have a car and a driver's license. Brad Friedman in for Mike Malloy as the occupation begins. We are occupying your public airwaves tonight as Mike is down in D.C. More on that in a bit and in the next hour when we will be taking calls from occupiers around the nation at 877-520-1150. If you'd like to call us now concerning Dr. Roger Johnston, who's my guest here for the moment from Argonne National Laboratory's Vulnerability Assessment Team, he is the one, along with his colleague John Warner, who were able to hack a touchscreen voting machine. In a few hours' time, really, once they figured out how to do it, didn't need to know the source code. All they had to do was place a $10 chip into the machine, and they were able to take complete control over the touchscreen system, the type of systems that are used in some 30% of the country, even now, even though we know all of this about them. And for another $15, you can add a remote control, and you can take complete control of a touchscreen voting system from a half a mile away. He also says the similar type of hack could happen with an optical scan machine. I'm going to get back to him in one moment, but I wanted to give the correct title for Nancy Toby's book. She'll be joining me tomorrow. Tonight we're talking about the problem. Tomorrow we'll talk about the solution. Her book is called Hands-On Elections, an informational handbook for running real elections using real paper ballots counted by real people. Imagine that. We'll be talking about that tomorrow. But now we've got Roger Johnston here. And before we went to the break, Dr. Johnston, we were talking about insiders. And you had said that you felt these machines could be made more secure. But is there anything that can guard against an insider basically changing numbers, flipping the results of an election from the inside if they have access to these systems, as most election officials and a lot of voting machine company officials have?
Well, I think the insider threat's a serious problem in any security application, not just involving elections. It certainly is typically the greatest threat, whether you're talking nuclear safeguards or cargo security or whatever. There are mitigating countermeasures to deal with the insider threat. Few organizations use these or use them very well.
Mm-hmm.
There's some obvious things such as doing background checks. In the case of voting machines, randomly selecting some to be pulled out of the election process and then at least partially disassembled and examined for signs of tampering or alien electronics or software malware.
Let me, you mentioned two things there. One, you said is background checks on the people who use these systems, for example?
Yeah, my understanding is most election municipalities or precincts really don't do background checks on, for example, the people who transport the voting machines to the polling place mm-hmm. and then back to the warehouse after the election. Many cases, there's not much in the way of background checks on the actual technicians who work on the voting machines, program them or prepare them for the elections. If you've got someone with serious drug or financial problems mm-hmm. or a known criminal background, this might be a matter of considerable concern.
Well, here's the problem, and I don't know how much if you saw any of my coverage over this of this at bradblog.com. Are you familiar with what happened in Clay County, Kentucky, Dr. Johnston?
Just vaguely, yeah.
Yeah. In that case, about eight different election officials, the highest ranking election officials in Clay County, Kentucky, were found to have been gaming elections for years down there, most recently on ES&S iVotronic machines, simply changing the votes of voters after they left the booth. And this was the county clerk of Clay County, Kentucky, the circuit court judge down there, the school superintendent down there. These were folks, election judges, who were specifically doing this. They were all in on this scheme. These were the high-ranking election officials. And these are the folks, and the reason I point this out is because you said, background checks. Well, I would think the circuit court judge and the county clerk would pass that test.
You'd hope so.
You would hope. But here they were gaming the system. And I don't think anything guards against that, nor do I think anything guards against the concern that they may have done it, whether they did it or not. In other words, you understand, we will never really know if they did it or not when we use these type of systems.
Well, a general rule in security is it's always about people in the end. It's not really about technology. It's not really about security strategies. It's really about people. There are countermeasures to the insider threat. Mm-hmm. Background checks aren't the only possible approach, but they're not a bad start. You really need to have, again, a good security culture in thinking about what insiders might potentially do. There are ways that one can actually reduce the insider threat. Driving it to zero is a very difficult problem. But I think the real problem with elections is we don't do much of anything about the insider threat. And that's really the problem. We may not totally be able to solve the problem, but we need to be taking some countermeasures.
And it's just not the case with these electronic voting systems, as we have learned over the years. They all use, at least in the case of Diebold, they all use the same type of key, a mini bar, quite literally a mini bar key that you can get at Staples. They all use the same key to open up these systems, but you found that you don't even necessarily have to open up the system in order to perform your remote control hack, correct?
Yeah, we demonstrate in the video where one can go in from essentially openings that are already available that wouldn't have a lock or a seal. It has to be a little bit of a contortionist, but you can insert the alien electronics without actually ever opening up the voting machine per se.
I'm going to get to your calls in a moment at 877-520-1150 for Dr. Roger Johnston of the Argonne National Laboratories Laboratory. But is there any reason? I know you study a lot of very complex security issues, but when we're dealing with elections, is there really any reason that you can see that we need to use computers like this, given how important these elections are and given, frankly, how easy it is to game the system without getting detected here?
Well, it's kind of a value judgment. Security is always a trade-off. If you want the absolute best security, you're not going to be very happy with it. It's going to be expensive and totally burdensome. On the other hand, if you don't have any security, then you're wide open to attacks. Where that exact line is, what the threshold is, and where we want to be, that's a value judgment that the public and officials need to decide. As a vulnerability assessor, I can talk about the vulnerabilities of different kinds of approaches. Mm-hmm. I can suggest ways to improve security. But in the end, do we need to go to paper ballots? Are we still okay with electronic voting machines if we did a better job with them? That's a value judgment, you know, for the American people to make.
Do you, when you look at security issues, as I mentioned, we're going to have Nancy Toby on here tomorrow to talk about counting paper ballots on election night at the precinct in front of everybody, you know, before with results posted before those ballots move anywhere. When you do you assess systems like that or only computer systems? In other words, could you look at a hand counted paper ballot system and say, okay, this is actually more secure than a computer?
Well, we actually look at a lot of paper record security issues for a wide variety of different applications. Certainly protecting paper in some ways is a more straightforward kind of security problem. I think you can have good security with paper ballots. I think you could have good security with electronic voting machines. The question is, how comfortable are you going to be with the security measures that are needed in each case?
Yeah, and I'm not sure I agree. Let me go to Chris in Oakland, California. And by the way, I think I might have accidentally hung up on somebody there. Call back 877-520-1150. Chris in Oakland, California. Welcome to the Mike Malloy Show. Do you have a question for Dr. Roger Johnston?
Well, a question and a comment. Thanks
okay.
for taking my call. You were talking about initially, just in the last couple moments of this last segment, you guys mentioned that you don't necessarily have to open the machine. So I called in before that. But my point was, if you do need access to the physical manipulative access to the internals of this machine, why can't they just put a lock on the thing? We have state regulators that put seals on every gas pump, you know, and I live in California, a lot of gas pumps. There's a seal and a crest and a signature on every gas pump to certify that it's accurate. I don't know why they don't just do this and put a lock on the thing that the state commissioner, regulator, whoever puts their seal on it, and that's that. You
okay.
know? And if,
yeah, let me get an answer from the doctor. What do you think, Roger? Is that a solution? Seals?
No, unfortunately, it really isn't. We do a great deal of work with tamper-indicating seals. And while if used properly with a great deal of training and careful approaches, one can begin to have a fairly reliable ability to detect tampering. But this involves far more training and understanding of tamper detection than we see typically from election officials and technicians and poll judges. Tamper-indicating seals in particular are awkward when they're pressure-sensitive adhesive label seals, like the kind that you're talking about. Those in general do not provide good, effective tamper detection. They can be defeated by amateurs with just a little bit of effort. So, unfortunately, it'd be nice if seals were really the answer, but at least the way they're currently designed and the way they're currently used, particularly for elections, there's very little effective security there.
Yeah, and it also seems to me when it comes to elections, when you're using those seals, a great way to really suppress the vote at a precinct is just violate the seals that they use on each of the voting machines, and then, in theory, nobody can vote because the seals have been broken, and then what do you do? Chris, did that answer your question?
Yeah, pretty much. I wasn't necessarily talking about like a pressure-sensitive adhesive kind, maybe some other kind. But if it's looked into and not feasible, then there's only one other alternative. But I think some Democrats have to win majority, like by 90%, somewhere in Georgia before there's a political will to fix this problem.
Yeah, of course, the entire state of Georgia uses the very same touchscreen voting systems made by Diebold that Roger Johnston hacked in his video that you can see at Salon.com and Bradblog.com. Chris, thanks for the call. I do appreciate it.
Thank you.
Let me, 877-520-1150 is our number. If you have a question about any of this, next hour, we're going to go back to the occupation. It's all about democracy, people. Are you beginning to get that? Let me go to, actually, I think I should go to a break here. Come back with more of your calls, 877-520-1150. Give us a call right now. Get in line. And if you're an occupier anywhere in this nation, anywhere in this country, you can call us as well and get in line for the next hour. Speaking with Dr. Roger Johnston of Argonne National Laboratories, the man who was able to take over a Diebold voting machine for $26 and control your vote. Brad Friedman in for Mike Malloy. Much more straight ahead. Please stay with us. Maybe. You don't know. We can't know. Brad Friedman in for Mike Malloy, speaking with Dr. Roger Johnson for just a few more minutes here about his alarming, chilling, disturbing hack of an electronic, several electronic voting systems. You can read about it in my story at Salon.com from last week or over at BradBlog.com. I am, of course, in for Mike Malloy, and we will take your calls next hour on The Occupation at 877-520-1150. But we got a couple of folks who have some questions or thoughts here for Dr. Johnson. And I should add, by the way, that these machines, these touchscreen machines, will be used by almost 30% of the electorate or so in the 2012 presidential election cycle. Everyone else will use electronic systems for the most part, optical scan systems that can also be gamed. Although tomorrow we'll be speaking with Nancy Toby from New Hampshire, where she counts paper ballots by hand in front of the people. All right, let me go to Arnold in Durham, North Carolina. Welcome, Arnold, to the Mike Malloy Show. What's on your mind, brother?
Hey, Brad, how you doing, man? Great, great show you have tonight on the subject matter. It's very good because we are overlooking a lot of this, and we're just going to fall into a trap with this. You know, as a young teenager, 1965, I watched at the Pettus Bridge as Bull Connors, the elite guard, crashed into the right flank of all those protesters up there, mm-hmm. and just start swinging clubs and beating the heads of people who were there to get the right to vote.
Yep.
Just to be realized here in the year 2011. And going to be in 2012, the vote is just is meaningless. The attack on democracy is far worse than what those guys did to people out there by beating them in the head.
Arnold, I completely agree with you, and I don't want to cut you off here, but we're coming up at the top of the hour, and I want to get a question for Dr. Johnson. You can call back next hour on that. Do you have a quick question for Dr. Johnson on this?
Last year, did they use these same machines in the 2010 election?
Yep, they sure as heck did. And Arnold, let me get to another call here. Give us a call back in the next hour or later on this week. You're absolutely right on your points, but I want to hit something here for specifically for the doctor. Carla in Marin County, California, welcome to the Mike Malloy Show. Do you have something, a question for Dr. Johnston?
Yeah, I want to know how hard it would be to train a whole bunch of progressives to hack the damn machines. I mean, if you can't, the Republicans are Republicons, as Norman Goldman calls them. They're sociopaths. Let me.
I know. I hear you're opining there, but let me get an answer to your actual question. Is it difficult, Dr. Roger Johnson, to hack these machines by whether it's progressives, Republicans, Iran, China, Anonymous? How difficult is this?
Well, I don't think you really need an army of people to do it. You need maybe one. Some other attacks might more conveniently be done with more people. But no, I think currently it doesn't represent a major challenge to someone sufficiently dedicated and willing to risk getting caught. I think it's just not that hard.
Which is what I try to tell everyone all the time when they say, oh, this is a conspiracy theory. And I say, well, it's not a theory because we've seen these hacks actually done. And it doesn't take a conspiracy when one insider, one properly placed hacker, can change the entire result of an entire election. Dr. Johnson, I really appreciate the work that you've been doing on this. Do you plan, you've done the Sequoia, you've done the Diebold, are you going to continue along these lines with other voting machines as well?
Well, we'd like to. There's just not, unfortunately, much funding in this area on election security. So we kind of have to do it as Saturday afternoon projects, which makes it very slow going. But hopefully we'll get a chance to look at some other issues.
Yeah, well, because no funding, because elections, they're really not all that important, apparently, in this country. Unbelievable. I'll try to get you a few more machines. And by the way, that machine, that Diebold machine, was donated by to Argonne for this test by VelvetRevolution.us. VelvetRevolution.us, which was co-founded by the Brad Blog, by way of full disclosure. Roger, thank you, sir. Really appreciate your work and talking to us tonight once again about this subject.
My pleasure. Thanks, Brett.
Have a good night, Dr. Roger Johnson of Argonne National Laboratories. Your occupation calls coming up next, 877-520-1150. Your public airwaves. Use them or lose them more than you already have. Brad in for Mike Malloy. Call us. Occupying your public airwaves. This is the Mike Malloy Show. Brad Friedman, your friendly citizen, investigative journalist, blogger, troublemaker, muckraker, all-around swell fellow and occupier right here on the Mike Malloy Show. In for Mike, who is in D.C., for the next few days. If you are anywhere near Washington, D.C., please pack a duffel and head on out to Occupy Washington, D.C. You can get information at OccupyWashingtonDC.org or October2011.org. That's where Mike will be emceeing the kickoff of those demonstrations tomorrow. Stop by, say hello. Tell him Brad said hello. And he, again, will be joining us, I think, at the top of tomorrow night's show to give us an update on how the kickoff went. So you'll want to do that. You'll also want to give us a call if you are one of the many occupiers now around the country in this growing movement. 877-520-1150. Is our phone number. The lines are filling up, so we'd love to hear from the occupiers themselves. Of course, we'd love to hear from other folks with other thoughts, other ideas, folks who have questions about the occupation, but folks who are occupying go straight to the top of the list. And by the way, we have the first Rasmussen, the first poll. This one comes from Rasmussen, a rather right-wing outlet, but they find that... Well, let's see. The occupiers, excuse me, the occupiers are more popular than Congress. This is Occupy. They were asking, I think, about Occupy Wall Street. They're more popular than Congress and more popular than the Tea Party movement. Now, remember when the Tea Party movement for just a few minutes there in the early days, in the very early minutes, and I'm not talking about the real Tea Party movement, the Ron Paul Tea Party movement that started around 2007, was critical of Bush. I'm talking about what has become the sore loser party, you know, that was really just a Republican scheme to try to gin up phony anger against Democrats. But remember in the very early days of that moment, that movement, the nascent second of it, when they were furious at all these bonuses that AIG was giving out. Remember, we had given all that money to the banks, and yet they were giving away all of these bonuses. They were furious about it. They were furious about what Wall Street was doing. That's how it started out for about 5 minutes. And then it was taken over, completely co-opted by the Republican Party, by the Koch brothers and their Americans for Prosperity, by Karl Rove's Freedom Watch. But for those people in the early days who were really angry about what the banks were doing, what the corporations were doing, how the taxpayer had gotten these guys off the hook, and yet they turned around and gave the middle finger to the country, took their money and ran. Those people, those Tea Partiers who really cared about the corporatocracy that was screwing over the working class man, you Tea Partiers, you ought to be occupying Wall Street. You ought to be working with the Occupy movements around the country. Because those folks are fighting for what you believed in before you were conned, before you were lied to by these cretins and liars like the Koch brothers and Karl Rove and all of those people who played you, who made you think that the Tea Party was about standing up for the working class man. No. It was standing up for the rich guys like the Koch brothers and Karl Rove. That's what it was always about. You, the working class stiff, you can go straight to hell. And if you have any question about that, go read what they think about you people over at my report at Mother Jones. Folks who heard, I think it was back in July when I was sitting in again for Mike Malloy. At the time, I couldn't tell you what it was, but I had talked about a very exclusive story that I was working on, a several-part series, and I had said that the part two of this story I had completely lost after I finished my first draft, and I couldn't tell you what it was. Now you know what it was. It was the story, the two-part story that I released at Mother Jones, the secret Koch tapes. Charles and David Koch talking about the mother of all wars that they considered 2012 to be. Alluding to Saddam Hussein, comparing him, it seems to me, comparing him to Barack Obama. We heard Charles Koch listing off the names of those millionaires and billionaires who had given more than $1 million over the past year to the Koch Foundation's political arms, their many political front groups. He was listing off the names, even though they had gone to this great effort to keep the entire thing secret, to play pink noise out into the mountains, static noise, to keep anybody from being able to listen in. Well, I guess they didn't work hard enough, because you can now listen in. All of those tapes are at bradblog.com. I released the two-part series at Mother Jones just after Labor Day. Part two had to do with some guy named Chris Christie. Remember him? Chris Christie, governor of New Jersey, who was not running for president. He had snuck out to New Jersey. And it was that part two of that story that I just finished the first draft of that I lost, that I was whining about on the air. I had to start it over from scratch. It was Chris Christie, that story. He had flown out to give the keynote address for the Koch brothers. Didn't tell anybody in New Jersey that he was leaving. His constituents didn't know. His voters didn't know. The media didn't know. Nobody knew until 2 months later when I broke the story at Mother Jones that Chris Christie had flown across the country to meet with the Koch brothers to give their stem winder of a keynote speech to them. We also learned in those tapes that Charles Koch called Chris Christie my kind of guy. and revealed that they had met several months earlier for 2 months, for 2 hours, in private, in his office, Charles Koch's office in New York City. I'm sorry, David Koch's office in New York City for 2 hours. Did you get to meet with Chris Christie for 2 hours? No, because you don't have billions of dollars. Speaking of which, for all the bitching and moaning the Koch brothers have done about the how terrible this, you know, what a war they need to take on this terrible dictator, Barack Obama. They made $18 billion over the last 3 years, $18 billion in personal wealth, Charles and David Koch, the oil conglomerate titans who inherited their oil business from their daddy. They made $18 billion over the last 3 years while they fired thousands of you people. Thousands of you people in the Tea Party movement, they told you to go to hell while they made $18 billion. That's what their personal wealth increased to. Charles and David Koch are tied for fourth place in Forbes' list of 400 wealthiest Americans. And yet, they're complaining. Seems like they ought to be sending a thank you card to Barack Obama instead of amassing millions to take him down with dark money. That's their plan. And they funded, they created the Tea Party movement. They created the global warming denial movement to protect their own oil and chemical business. They are lying to you. They are using millions and millions and perhaps billions of dollars to do it. They're calling you patriots, you Tea Party folks. You are the patriots, they say. But they're lying. They think you are a chump. You are the patsies doing their very dirty work for them. If you have any questions about that, just you know, just look at Forbes. Look at $18 billion they made. They increased wealth under Barack Obama while you can go straight to hell. Oh, and by the way, Chris Christie's secret trip out to Koch to Vail, Colorado to give the speech for the Kochs. The Republican Party of New Jersey, according to Bloomberg, and we've got it today at bradblog.com, paid $63,000 to fly Chris Christie out to New Jersey and back for the day. He didn't even stay overnight. $63,000. So when the Republican Party asks you for your next donation, $20, $30, $50, $100, remember, they shipped Chris Christie out for a few hours to speak with billionaires in secret, in private. We're willing to spend $63,000 of your money to do it. Or maybe it was the Koch brothers' money. What did they get in return? We don't know. Anyway, your occupation calls coming up right after this. Tons of folks on the line, but you can still get in. 877-520-1150. Brad in for Mike Malloy.
Would you hear my voice come through the music? Would you hold?
This is a public service announcement with guitar.
Welcome back to the Mike Malloy Show. Brad. Yeah, I should have let that play. Well, we'll do that tomorrow. I forgot about it. Yes, you do have the right not to be killed. Brad Friedman in for Mike Malloy. 877-520-1150. The lines are lit up with occupiers. It is time to occupy now your public airwaves. Let me get to Philip occupying San Francisco. Welcome to the Mike Malloy Show, sir. Oh, Philip.
Hey, Brad. How are you?
I'm doing okay. How are you? Are you occupying San Francisco?
Yeah, San Francisco, Occupy San Francisco. It's been great 2 weeks here, and we spawned a group over in Berkeley, one in Oakland that started yesterday, and then another one in San Jose starts on Friday.
How many?
It's a growing infectious operation here.
Your best guess, how many folks are at the Occupy San Francisco right now?
Oh, probably at 250.
And
occupying, and we had a march today in solidarity with the Wall Street, Occupy Wall Street.
Right.
Our march was about 300 people, and we are occupying the portico front door of the Federal Reserve Bank of San Francisco.
And is that the Federal Reserve Bank in San Francisco? Do people know where that is? I'm not from San Francisco, so will they know where that is?
Foot of Market Street. Uh-huh. At the foot of Market Street, 101 Market Street, right at, throw a rock and hit the ferry building.
Gotcha.
So we're right there. It's very prominent.
And,
very prominent location.
Yeah. And how can people help you guys? What do you guys need out there in San Francisco?
We need people. We need people because there's a tremendous amount of work to do. This is an organization that's built, it's an organic group that's been here 2 weeks, and we need, just bodies, people to just do support the media outreach, the education, we need greeters, we need people out, just come down. 101 Market Street, the Federal Reserve Bank.
Very
and,
good.
We have now ringed the building. We have ringed the building with an encampment.
Police and you guys getting along all right?
Oh, the police have been absolutely delightful, absolutely delightful. Today we had a march which we went up Market Street. We had basically a police escort, as is what I would call it. As we went down, we went through City Hall, ringed around City Hall, and then we came down California Street back towards the Federal Reserve Bank. Down that hill, they invited our group. It was March, it was about 1,500, invited us to step into the street. We stepped into the street, and we took the street all the way down California Street. We congregated in front of the original Bank of America headquarters building there for a while and greeted them. And they were just wonderful. Police have been so supportive. Stopped the traffic for us. I mean, it was a very smooth operation today.
Delighted to hear it, Philip. Thank you for your call and for your occupation, sir. Stay in touch. We're going to be doing this third hour every night this week. So thank you, brothers.
We have General Assembly 6 o'clock every night, and we have another rally 12 o'clock this Saturday, 101 Market Street. Thank you, Brad.
You bet. And folks listening on Green 960, turn out and go support the occupiers. Join, in fact, the occupation. Let me see if I can get in. Do I have time for another one? Yeah, I can. Let's try this. Madeline from Fort Wayne, Indiana. Welcome to the Mike Malloy Show, Madeline.
Yes, good evening, Brad, and thank you for taking my call. I called primarily to applaud you, commend the young people who are occupying Wall Street, primarily because I participated in ERA marches and marches against apartheid. We had as our mantra the Isley Brothers Fight the Power song. The major thing that I can do now is to send socks to those who are in New York on Wall Street. So I am going to do that along with some of the other things that they have requested. And thank you for all that you are doing.
Thank you for all that you are doing. Are they uprising yet in Fort Wayne, Indiana, Madeline?
Oh, they're kind of slow here.
Well, they'll get the picture soon enough. Thanks for all that you're doing, Madeline. Really appreciate that vote of confidence and support and helping out the folks down there at the Occupy Movement in Wall Street. Yes, send them socks. It's getting cold out here. Thanks for the call, Madeline. 877 you bet. 877-520-1150. We are occupying your public airwaves right here on the Mike Malloy Show. Give us a call. Much more ahead.
As soon as
as you're born, they make you feel small. By giving you no time instead of it all. Till the pain is so big you feel nothing at all. A working class hero is something to be.
Supporting the working class heroes in this nation, you are listening to The Uprising on The Mike Malloy Show. Brad Friedman of bradblog.com in for Mike Malloy, talking to the occupiers and those with thoughts on the occupations rising now around the country. You want democracy? You want the spirit of the real Tea Party? This is it. 877-520-1150. Let's go to Bill in Cleveland. Welcome to The Mike Malloy Show, sir.
Hey, Brad, how are you? This is Bill Wrightsman in Cleveland, Ohio, home of the stolen election of 2004.
Uh-oh, Bill of Rights, man. Yeah, in 2004. You guys are, got to applaud, by the way, the folks in Ohio. You guys are amazing. I know that Governor Kasich and the Republicans tried to put in new voter suppression, of course, new voter suppression laws trying to limit early voting registration, and more than 300,000 voters in Ohio stood up, signed a signature to get that voter suppression bill off the books and onto the ballot where the people will vote on it instead of being suppressed by it next year. So, Ohio, you guys rock. Anyway, Bill, what's on your mind?
We were out there, the Bill of Rights man and the Brick TV crew were out there gathering signatures to suppress or to get on the ballot the House Bill 194, which would have severely limited the ability for people to vote early and register to vote. And we were successful in getting over 300,000. We still have people out on the streets this week because we don't know if the current Republican guy is going to, certify all the signatures we did gather. But
The Secretary of State out there, John Husted, who actually was, I want to give him props too, Republican Secretary of State of Ohio, but said no way to that photo ID restriction that the Republicans were trying to do. He bucked his own party and said, no, I'm not here to keep people from voting, at least with the photo ID law. So we'll see how the other thing goes. But I think you guys may have saved the 2012 election in Ohio, not for Democrats, not for Republicans, but for Americans. Anyway, listen, I got a bunch of folks online here, a bunch of occupiers. So, Bill, you say Occupy Cleveland.
Another thing, Brad, don't forget, everybody go to OccupyCleveland.com. We start tomorrow at 12 noon, and we will be continuing our occupation of downtown Cleveland at the Free Stamp across from the federal building. Everybody knows in Cleveland where the Free Stamp is. Be there, 12 o'clock, aloha, OccupyCleveland.com.
OccupyCleveland.com, noon tomorrow at the Free Stamp building?
The Free Stamp across from the federal building.
There you go.
Which is only a block and a half away from the Federal Reserve building.
Gotcha. All right,
gotcha.
Bill.
Thanks, Brad. Love you.
Thank you. Love you back. Let me go to, Karen in, Karen in Oxnard. There's an Occupy Oxnard, Karen?
Yes, I am Karen. I'm from Oxnard, and we do have an event going on. It's coming next week on the 15th, but I want to say to everybody that I'm very much in awe of people in big cities who are doing things. They've got big things planned, but I want people to know that in small cities, you can do the same thing. You need to have your presence known, whether you live in a big city or a small city like I do.
Yeah, Oxnard, pretty small city outside of Los Angeles. So you're, is there any place people can get more information on the Occupy Oxnard movement, Karen?
Well, you just go to www.occupytogether.com. org, and you will find information about all occupations happening throughout the country. And as I look at it now,
There are over 450 taking place.
Rock and roll. Thanks, Karen. Really appreciate you checking in, and stay in touch. We're going to be doing this every night for the next couple of nights, and I want to hear from the occupiers. Thanks, Karen, for fighting for your rights and for mine. Let me go to Ken, who has a different point of view, it looks like, on all of this. Hey, Ken, from Elkhart, Indiana. Welcome to the Mike Malloy Show, sir. What's on your mind?
How you doing, Brad? I just want to say that those people down on Wall Street, they're bums, man. You know what? And I'll tell you what, the Tea Party never believed the same thing these people do.
Really? What makes them bums down there at the Occupy Wall Street?
Well, how long have they been down there?
About 3 weeks.
Yeah, they ain't working, are they?
Well, no, you may have heard there's a problem, an unemployment problem in this country because the corporations decided that it was better to lay off people and maximize their profits and screw the working man. And so, yeah, we've got a problem with unemployment.
So it's all the corporations' fault, huh?
Yeah.
You know what? That's a fallacy.
Whose fault is it, Ken?
Well, let me tell you, the government makes the rules, and the Democrats have been making the rules here for quite a while, and they got things so messed up that this economy is never going to recover until we get Obama out of the White House.
Okay, well, you can do that, Ken, but let me ask you, when Wall Street crashed because they were playing games with your mortgages and everything else during the Bush administration, that was the Democrats' fault. Is that what you're saying?
Well, let me tell you, back in 1999, the New York Times did an article about Fannie Mae and subprime loans that Clinton allowed to come in and sign into law.
Right.
They predicted that this would happen back in 1999.
Yeah, they did.
Over Bush administration, he tried to reform Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, but they wouldn't do it. The Democrats wouldn't do it.
I see.
And we're continuing.
And so the subprime mortgage, when all of the banks decided, and it wasn't just Fannie and Freddie, but when all of them decided that we would start making money by bundling these subprime mortgages and actually selling them off as commodities, at like a casino, even though they became worthless after a while, that was still Fannie and Freddie's fault and the Democrats,
Brad,
right?
Brad, that was legal, Brad. The government makes the rules.
That was legal,
rules,
yes.
Brad.
Oh, okay.
The government makes the rules. It was legal to sell.
Did I say it was illegal? What I said was that's what caused the market to crash. Because the corporations, the banks, hang on, the banks can. Spent millions and billions to lobby both Republicans and Democrats to remove the regulations, to remove the rules, so that they could gamble with your mortgages and your houses and your livelihoods, and you're cool with that, right? Because it was legal, Ken.
Bill Clinton allowed for derivatives.
Right.
Mortgage-backed securities.
Right.
He is the one that signed that into law.
Right. And your point is?
The point is that it was part of this push from Democrats to put people into houses who couldn't afford them and should have never had the loans anyway.
Okay, wrong, Ken, and I'm going to let you go after this because you're wrong. First, Phil Grant... Okay, I'll tell you why I think you're wrong. Phil Graham's bill, doing away with these regulations, the things that Clinton signed that he never should have signed.
Well, he signed it, and it passed the Senate by 80%. 80
right.
senators voted for
right.
it.
Right.
Democrats and Republicans. Who,
exactly. And that is exactly the point that the occupiers on Wall Street have been trying to make.
Well,
do you got it, Ken?
The wrong people. They should be down in front of the White House and down in front of the Congress occupying those people because they're the ones who make the rules.
You're right, pal. And that's exactly where they're going to be tomorrow. And I hope you will join them at OccupyWashingtonDC.org because they are fighting for your rights and they are fighting against Republicans. Republicans and against Democrats and against anybody else who doesn't give a damn about the working class in this country, Ken. So I hope you will head out and join them.
They can vote these socialists out of office and these communists.
I know. Tell me about it. I agree. They should, because when George W. Bush decided to socialize the banks and bail those guys out, I agree the socialist George Bush should have been voted the hell out of office. I'm glad you agree. Thanks for your call, Ken. Good to hear from you, my friend.
Bye.
All right. Let me go to a quick break here. You're listening to Brad on the Mike Malloy Show. We can get in a few more calls from you occupiers. 877-520-1150. Tony, why you got your head in your hands? It's late at night to cause trouble, isn't it? Never too late. 877-520-1150. Brad in for Mike. My thanks tonight to engineer Tony Sorrentino here at LA's K-Talk AM 1150. Thank you, Tony. You rock as ever. My thanks, of course, to producer Desi Doyen, as usual, producer, call screener, chat room hostess, and everything else. Also to For Earth in the chat room, in the bradblog.com chat room. Also to Jeannie Dean in the bradblog.com chat room. And my thanks to my guest tonight, Jesse LaGreca of Occupy Wall Street, Roger Johnston of Argonne National Labs, and some guy named Mike Malloy, who called in here early, and he'll call again tomorrow from the OccupyWashingtonDC.org demonstrations, where he will be for the next two nights while I am here in his chair. Time for a few more calls from you occupiers at 877-520-1150 all week long. Third hour of the show, I'm going to be leaving it open to the occupiers to occupy your public airwaves. Joy in Santa Cruz, welcome back to the Mike Malloy Show, Joy.
Hi, sweetie.
Hi, dear.
Okay, San Lorenzo Park, October 6, 2011, 10 o'clock a.m. is when we are doing Occupy Santa Cruz.
Occupy Santa Cruz, October, say it again.
October 6th.
That's tomorrow.
Yes.
Tomorrow, okay, October 6th, Thursday at 10 a.m. All right.
San Lorenzo Park.
San Lorenzo Park?
San Lorenzo.
Oh, Lorenzo.
With a Z as in zoo.
Lorenzo Park. All right, you going to be there?
Yes, sir.
Are you going to be sticking around? Is it a one-day thing? Are you guys going to be there for a long haul? Any idea yet?
I don't know. I just discovered this myself tonight, so I'm going to go and see what they're going to say.
All right.
But
yes,
I want one thing to be read before I get off the phone.
Okay.
With you. As one people united, we acknowledge the reality that the future of the human race requires the cooperation of its members, that our system must protect our rights, and upon corruption of that system, it is up to the individuals to protect their own rights and those of their neighbors.
Joy, I was waiting a lot. She was waiting a long time, and I did that, didn't I? I'm sorry, Joy. I think she can tell us in the chat room. I think that was the a statement that was put together by the Occupy Wall Street people. And I'm sorry, Joy. I did not mean to do that. Let me get to. I know, but I've only got a few minutes left. Steve in Burbank, welcome to the Mike Malloy Show. Don't look at me like that, Tony. It was not on purpose. Steve.
Hello, Brad.
Hey, Steve. What's on your mind, brother? I only got a few more minutes, and I'll try to get back Joy if she calls in.
Well,
yes.
What's cool about this is we see the old codgers, such as myself, in dialogue with the young whippersnappers. And what it has to be is refined dialogue. We cannot go too deep into advanced political theory, but what we can say is things like vacant housing, homeless children, morality. Please explain. You know, families, you know, homeless families, we can say the home is the primary foundation of a strong family. And you know, and that wild-eyed Jesse LaGreca,
yeah.
You know, that hippie, you know, that malcontent, hysterical, you know, if he could talk to the media like, oh, wait a second, I'm sorry, he already does that.
He already does. All right, Steve,
okay.
Listen, I got a lot of other callers. Are you going to the Occupy LA?
I've been there twice. I'm going again. I'm there every chance I get.
Rock and roll, brothers. Thanks, Steve. I want to get to as many calls as I can here. Let me go to Mark in San Francisco. I still feel bad that I didn't mean to dump Joy. Mark in San Francisco, welcome to the Mike Malloy Show, sir.
How you doing, Brad?
I'm okay. Are you occupying San Francisco?
You better believe it. Every chance I get.
How's it going out there?
Well, I'm not out there right now. I was there today at
All right.
101 Market Street.
Yep.
And it's going good. They're camping out there, and we're in for the long haul here in San Francisco. We're going to do our part. You better believe that.
All right. The rain didn't bother you guys too much today?
No, it's not going to bother us.
All right.
You know, the policemen were great. We got a good police department here in San Francisco.
That's what I hear. I'm delighted to hear it. Hey, thanks, Mark. I appreciate the call. Let me see
keep
if I can...
Keep up the good work, Brad. You're a good patriot.
Back at you, my friend. Let me get to Jacob in Eureka, California. Welcome to the Mike Malloy Show, sir.
Yeah, I just want to make a point. I see the protesters in New York, Wall Street. I see Mike sympathizing with them, agreeing with them, but they need to realize that guy, Michael Moore, the film director, is also very rich.
Yeah, and what's the problem with that?
He's a hypocrite.
Why is he a hypocrite?
He's a rich nut, that's all.
What's the problem with being rich?
You got the Democrats are complaining about CEOs. That's also a rich Hollywood star.
No. Jacob, maybe you misunderstood. They don't have a problem with Michael Moore being rich or anybody else being rich. They just think that millionaires like Michael Moore ought to pay a fair share so that, you know, their secretaries don't pay more than them.
I'd just like to point out, I have friends who work their butts off in a restaurant. I mean, $2.50.
Right.
They really work their butts off, and Democrats want to tax them.
Wait. They make $250,000 a year in a restaurant?
Yeah, they run it themselves.
They own the restaurant. They own the restaurant.
What?
They own the restaurant.
Yes.
Okay. And so you don't think that they should pay 3% more. You think that the busboys and the waiters should pay a higher rate on their taxes than the owners of the restaurant, correct?
The CEOs and the stupid celebrities should pay more. That's why I think.
That's exactly what the people are calling for, Jacob. Pay attention. Man, how stupid. You know, it's not that they're stupid. It's that Fox News is lying to them. Nobody has a problem with the fact that Michael Moore is a millionaire. They have a problem with the fact that his tax rate, his effective tax rate, ends up being lower than his secretary. Don't you guys get it? They're fighting for all of us. God, you know, and I had some clips. I'll play them tomorrow night. The way Fox News is lying to you, the way this jackass Herman Cain, man, is he stupid. Man, is he stupid. Does he not get it? As you'll find out tomorrow, no, he don't. Joy, I'm sorry. I'm out of time, but I got you back. What was the declaration you were reading? Where can folks find it?
Okay, it's a declaration of the occupation of New York City.
And where can they can get that at OccupyWallStreet.org?
Yes, they can. I think I can say this within the time period we've got.
No, you can't, because I got somebody else I have to get to, Joy. I want to point them to it. OccupyWallStreet.org. And I'm sorry I hung up on you. I really didn't mean to.
Oh, I know you didn't. I love you, honey.
Love you back. Thanks, Joy. Let me get to Joe very quickly in Indiana, because that last guy from Indiana gave the whole state a bad name. Hey, Joy. Joe, welcome to the Malloy Show. You got about 15 seconds, brother.
Okay, bottom line, the more government that gets into the free market, the more it screws it up. So the fact that the government guarantees Fannie and Freddie loans
yeah.
and then forced... force banks to underwrite mortgages.
No, they didn't, Joe. Joe, they didn't force anybody. No bank ever, ever had to give a loan to anybody who couldn't afford it. Unfortunately, Joe, you didn't improve Indiana's name. Maybe tomorrow we will. Brad, in from Mike. We'll see you at bradblog.com.